You're listening to Triple Radio on the Fat Gatsby Network.
Hey
girl, welcome to Fat Gatsby's Triple Radio.
Hey girl, it's your boy Fat Gatsby.
It's your boy Fat Gatsby coming back at ya. I think this makes 4 months of consecutive podcasts in some way, shape, or form. This is Tim, that's Dave. Hey, Weiss is here.
Hey, hello. Weiss is here. It's a Fat Gatsby family reunion.
Yeah, no Ben.
Yeah, ironically called Triple Radio for once, I'm guessing. Just the two of you normally at this point?
Or? Usually it's just
trying to change that.
Yeah.
When I feel like that energy of like, I'm like, oh fuck, we should do more. Like we should get more people on here to talk about stuff and, yeah, you know, talking about games and shit. And then it's just like, you know,
yeah.
Then I forget that we have a podcast website for 3 months and it's just like, oh fuck.
You know, I wish I could bring more energy when it's just the two of us. It's just Tim just bores the fuck out of me. He's a boring
person. We're
so sick
of each other. It's ridiculous.
I have nothing to say to you. And now I'm looking at you. We usually don't look at each other, but I'm looking at you now.
We usually got the cameras off.
Yeah.
It's usually my dick is out, which it is. It's just on the table.
I mean, I can't tell. Yeah. I'm looking at the monster closet behind you, Dave. It just looks like it's shoes have evolved.
Yes. It's the
microphone thing.
That's the door to my booth. And these are like just extra cables.
This does not translate to audio, Dave.
Hanging in a shoe tree.
There's
USB cables and shit on one side, and then there's a bunch of microphones on the other side. Like, look, here's a microphone, and look, here's another microphone, and look, there's like six more microphones back here that I never use. They just live behind this door, and that's my life now.
So if you have a problem with this audio, just know that Dave chose the microphone that he thought was the best out of all of these.
And he spends so much time fucking around with microphones.
Yeah.
That
you'd think I'd have it down.
Yeah.
You'd think I'd have it down, Pat. Hey.
That quality.
Yeah. Look, it is it's February. It's not been that long since we did a podcast, but I tell you what, I have been playing some effing video games. Way more than usual.
Yeah?
Yeah, I have. You guys, how about you?
I guess more than usual. Mine come in like weird waves, I guess. I don't have that many. I have my Switch down here just to like power on to remind myself what I've played in the last year, I guess.
Speaking of the last year, Weiss, when we did Blank of the Year, we did not talk about movies at all. But sure. I know you watch more stuff than us, generally speaking, in terms of new release movies. So I was wondering if you had any comment on any fucking good movies that came out in 2020.
Yeah,
plenty. I mean, Wolfwalkers was probably my top, I think, last year.
Wolfwalkers.
Person that did Song of the Sea. And
That movie. Yeah, that one I got to fucking see. That right. That's right.
Yeah, I got Apple Plus.
Oh, it's on Apple fucking Plus. Yeah, right.
And just get a trial. There's nothing on there. I mean, people like Ted Lasso. Ted Lasso's good.
Ted Lasso's real good.
I mean, I got that CBS trial for Picard's sake. So yeah, okay. I'm gonna have to actually do this.
Yeah, good luck
with
that.
What?
Yeah. Picard.
No, I mean I watched it. Remember we talked about it, Dave.
Oh okay. There's two episodes I really like. I need to see Discovery season 3, I've heard picked up a bit. But
yeah, one of my coworkers keeps talking up Discovery a bit.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of good stuff to watch.
A lot of good stuff out there.
I think my thing is like there's just the way streaming works. And it's the same with games. I need to find a way to make whatever I'm indulging in entertainment wise feel special.
Feel meaningful.
So I'm trying to either, you know, I'll pick up physical media if there's a sale, I'll, you know, if something pops up on streaming that actually makes me excited, I'll pop it on instead of adding it to a queue. I feel like that's what's been happening. It's just like shit's been sitting in queues for so long.
Piling
like
up,
like a Steam library filled out with Humble Bundle purchases.
I mean, that's specifically why I don't play PC games.
Yeah.
Like Steam killed me. Steam GOG, all of it. Like I can't. Like Epic Games was giving, you know, I still popped on to get Dandara, but
oh yeah.
Like I never play any of those games. What helped? I bought that Itch.io like huge bundle.
The mega bundle, yeah.
The mega bundle, of course.
For racial justice.
Yeah. And I played a short hike and I loved it. And I had to make like a specific, okay, today we're going to play a short hike. You know, we're going to like do all of these things and our treat is a short hike. Love that game. That game's great.
That's
it's so dumb. I actually have to play through that whole game. I know it's not long, but I just fucking have it. I played it for like 15. It was awkward to play on at the time for some reason. I don't remember why, but I
mean, that for me was the marquee title of the bundle. I still haven't played it.
Yeah.
That's why I bought the bundle. It's not why I bought that. I bought it for racial justice, obviously. There's a big reason why I've been playing a lot of video games lately, and it's because, like, off the top of her head, like 2 weeks ago, we're laying in bed, and Jan is, I don't know, I've got my eyes closed, I'm ready to go to sleep, and Jan just keeps talking at me, and Jan, she lands on, finally, she says, you know what you should do? You should play, I must have mentioned something about video games, and she said, you should play a different video game system every day for 7 days. Like, play a system you don't usually play, dig it out, whatever. Give yourself an excuse to dig out some old system every day for 7 days. And I took her just deadly serious. I was like, okay, yeah, you've given me a reason. All right. My wife gave me permission, but she kind of told me to do it. And that, you know, I mean, lit enough of a fire under me that I said, okay, I'm going to do it. And so I fired up my Vita for the first time in more than a year and my PlayStation 3 and like a whole bunch of other systems that I have. I finally got like Dreamcast emulation running well on my PC.
I heard that's been leaps and bounds.
Oh man. Yeah. I mean, it's
even
perfect.
Saturn.
Yeah. That's the thing. Saturn, I haven't tried yet, but I got Wii. I got high definition Wii running perfectly on my PC with real Wii motes and everything, so that my kids could try Wii Tennis, you know, which predates them, their existence by several years. So that has gotten me. Yeah, they can't. Oh boy, my 4 year old just like she wants to, but she just can't. She does not. You know, especially like bowl. You have to like hold on to the button when you bowl and then release it as you thrust, and she doesn't have the coordination. But that has gotten me to like go back and try out. Sometimes I would try out like a game that I kind of missed that I wanted to make sure. I spent more time with La Mulana on my Vita than I ever had before. Like it finally clicked with me and I'm like, oh, okay, this is great now. I get why people love this game now. I tried like Legacy of Kain Soul Reaver, which I had never played before. That's a really good, well-designed guy. I played the PlayStation version because I had the PlayStation Classic.
Dreamcast so good.
Only the sequel was on Dreamcast. Soul Reaver 2, I believe. Only
No. Soul Reaver 2 was not on Dreamcast.
Wait a minute. What?
I only have Soul Reaver, which I bought.
Soul Reaver 2 only came out on PS2.
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't know this. Oh,
yeah,
what am I doing?
Way better.
Well, here I was all impressed by the PlayStation version, like the impressive use of color and dithering and like level design accommodating for low amounts of RAM. I better play the Dreamcast version.
Long empty hallways.
Corners. A lot of corners.
There's a lot of corners. A
lot of good traveling around to obscure the stream. Yeah. So
that
wonderful
Michael Bell voice.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't have done that challenge, Dave, except it's impractical for me to hook up a different, or it's impractical for me to consult a different old system every day of the week.
Oh, yeah, I guess. It was difficult. That was part of the challenge. And what I realized, so here's the thing. She challenged me after it was done. Then she challenged me, now pick a specific game that you have never played before. Play a specific game every day for 7 days. And so I started to make a list, and I started to prep that list based on, like, all right, what systems do I have available to me? What format do I own? Do I own this game in several formats? Which will be the easiest for me to access? And the list was like 90% RPGs. So I had to tell her, like, I'm sorry, sweetheart, I can't play an RPG like for 45 minutes every day. That's not a different RPG. That's not going to do it. maybe I will, just for the hell of it. But it also, it made me... So, I made a couple social media posts about this specifically, that, like, my portable hardware was problematic as fuck. Like, my Vita card was corrupt, so I had to reformat that and re-download all my games. All of my DS and older systems had buttons that no longer worked. My original GBA start button doesn't work. My SP shoulder buttons have been borked for years. Yeah, my DS Lite shoulder buttons went... I fixed those. I repaired those. But also, I was, you know, it got me traveling down this path of, like, you know, if I can't rely on my Game Boy Advance playing systems anymore, I need a newfangled Game Boy Advance. I need one of these, either these clone systems or these emulator-based Chinese handhelds. So I've been going down a rabbit hole looking for, like, what is the best sub-$100 Chinese emulation handheld that's got the best screen, that's like a resolution where Game Boy Advance scales up perfectly with no distortion. That's going to be my next big step, is that I'm going to buy one of these fucking, like, an Ann Bernick RG351 or an Odroid Go or one of those fucking things. Because that's what I want in my life now. I was also looking at, like, used SPs, like the 101 version with the true backlit screen. Yeah, with the later revisions of a Game Boy Advance SP with a true backlit, as opposed to the front lit screen that the first run had. But then I remembered, oh shit, Game Boy Advance games don't just go to sleep. And I said, fuck that. Nope, not doing it. I gotta be able to put a system to sleep.
Quick saves.
What?
Yeah.
Most of them have quick saves.
I don't think most of them. I think some later.
I think the ones you'd want to play have quick saves.
Later first party titles had quick saves.
Harmony of Dissonance has a quick save.
Harmony of Dissonance has a quick save?
Yeah.
Oh.
You want to play that?
I kind of do, actually.
I'm bringing it up because I'm playing it. Or I just brought it up because I just happen to be playing it.
Yeah, how's Harmony of Dissonance, Tim?
Kind of shit. Yeah. But we'll see how it goes.
It's not bad. I mean, it's certainly not. If you had to rank them, it's down near the bottom, but it's still not a bad game.
If I'm ranking the portable Symphony ripoffs, it might be at the bottom. It brings thus far, and I haven't even played, I think I played like an hour of it, has not brought like literally one interesting thing to that formula yet.
Okay. We'll see. I haven't played it in 15 years, but I thought it was better than Circle of the Moon at the time.
Yeah. But Circle of the Moon had that card thing, so at least it had an interesting idea.
Yeah, at the time, liked Circle of the Moon a lot more, except I couldn't see Circle of the Moon properly.
That's what made Harmony good at the time, is you could see it.
Yeah.
New feature, the game is visible.
Yeah. Well, the other thing about that challenge is that it's actually not that out of the ordinary that I do yank out old systems, because me and the boy will just be like playing in the basement and play shit. Like, I've touched my Vita in the last few months. I don't remember what I was playing on it, but I remember I touched it. and I've been playing the Game Boy Advance, and I have my 3DS.
Did the Vita touch you? Where did the Vita touch
maybe,
you?
Maybe.
Show me
maybe
on the doll where the Vita touched
night.
You.
It was right next. It was on my nightstand. And yeah, my 3DS like still lives in my backpack in case I don't bring my Switch to work, because the 3DS never loses its charge, apparently.
Battery's nice.
Yeah, and it's just like, oh, I'm going to pop it open and I'm going to play some Picross.
Guess what game has never gone on sale, because always kept an eye for it.
I'm kidding.
The second.
Man, you better get that before they shut down the that eShop.
Oh, man.
Have they announced an official shutdown?
No, it's like stuff from What started to peel off, Dave?
Oh, so some stuff that was like 10 years old and older. So mostly DSiWare stuff.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
then, in a twist, about 2 weeks later, most of it, not all of it, returned.
Oh, okay. So yeah. Then maybe it's not.
That's the only game I keep my 3DS XL plugged in because, like, when I run out of games and I go, I want to beat SMT4. Mm. And I've picked at it and I've started it like 3 or 4 times. It's an easy game to pick up. I'm just never going to beat that game.
Yeah, I also picked up that sometime in the last year and looked at my save and was like, I was like 30 hours in. I have no idea where the fuck I need to go. I'm looking at my demons. I'm like, I just have to let this one go. I just have to let it go. I'm sorry. Hey, I played it for 30 hours. I don't feel bad.
I know. You
got your money.
But, I tried Strange Journey twice. I'm not going to do that again. That's way too grindy. But
yeah, I was happy when I got past a boss that I was stuck on in that game. I felt like I beat the game and then I was done. I didn't, but yeah. So at some point in the last year, driving around in the car, my child discovered that there was more than one Mario Kart game.
Oh,
because I believe we were listening to the Lonely Rolling Stars version of Rainbow Road, which is from Double Dash. So he's reading the track name on the display in my car. He's like, Mario Kart Double Dash. What's that? I'm like, well, buddy, you know how you play Mario Kart 8? That is one of 8 Mario Kart games.
It's not just called 8.
It's not just called 8. No, there is actually 7. And like, this blew his fucking mind. And I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure I own almost all of them. So we'll have to bust some out at some point. So inevitably one day, you know, I got out the GameCube and hooked up Double Dash for him to check out. And then also inevitably within like 15 minutes, I was like, let me sit down and play this with you, kid. Cause we can both get on the same cart and drive around. That's the awesome thing about Double Dash. We can play it co-op. So I can drive and he can just throw shit at other people on the road. Not that he can't do both, but it's more fun for him that way. So, you know, we played some GameCube and then like just last weekend, he was down there playing Double Dash and I'm like, oh, I'm going to hook up my Dreamcast with this HDMI upscaler that I got at some point.
At some point?
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, it was like some point in the last year. I don't remember when, but I never actually got around to hooking it. My intention was to hook it up to my Elgato to stream some Dreamcast, but it wouldn't fucking work through that. So I didn't. So then I'm like, I'll hook it up to a TV.
It's the same cable I have because I think there's a specific thing that says you can't do that.
Yeah. It's a fucking Elgato thing, really, at the end of the day. And I have this other box that I think it might work through, besides the point.
Sure.
But because it uses like the VGA output of the Dreamcast, right. So the game has to have like a VGA output. I thought Jet Set Radio kind of looked like shit through it. Didn't look great, you know, Project Justice looked real nice. Mm. That game has not really aged a day. My God. Like, because it was really sharp at the time, and it looks just as good as I remember it. It's like, this is a great-looking game.
Oh, man.
Like, has not aged at all. It's just, like, still looks good.
My girls went hard on Crazy Taxi just a few days ago. And yeah, I'm playing Dreamcast games now in ReDream, which is the like easiest to configure Dreamcast emulator for PC. There, it's freeware, which is adorable. You pay $5 to scale up the resolution, but I tell you what, even at native resolution, I mean, the art design in so many of those games was so good. Dead or Alive, what was it? 2 on Dreamcast?
Two was on Dreamcast, yeah.
That game is fucking gorgeous. Even at 480p on my, you know, it's yeah. Just, yeah. Space Channel 5, they were not as into as I hoped they would be, but, but yeah, no.
It's a little tricky. Space Channel 5 is a little weird, Dave.
But I thought it would be my 9-year-old's level of weird. I thought that would be right up her alley. Like, I'm sitting there, you know, just grooving on, ba, 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 choo, choo, choo. And she just, you know, she doesn't have that.
I wonder if you need a little bit of reference because it's a 60s, you know, vision of the future swinging sci-fi.
So,
like, there's a
lot of time. So much of the Dreamcast is like this perfect time capsule for like the millennium, right? For that turn of the century when there was like nostalgia for the 60s and the early 70s and stuff. And it was like every black character has an afro. Every black character in every video game from that era has an afro. It's ridiculous.
Japan has a very well-rounded view.
No, I'm talking about the American game, like Ready to Rumble and SSX, you know, like they are all every black character is bell bottom, jive talking, big sunglasses caricature. It's something. We gonna make some crazy money.
Yeah, make that crazy money.
Yeah, I got I picked up Tony Hawk 3 last year and went through that because I had played 1, 2, and 4 to death. Like I played 3 like at UB with you guys a few times. Mm-hmm. That was like it. Really? So I was always like, well,
I don't think I ever played it.
It's good.
Yeah.
Like I mean, like, I think I like 4 more than most people because I didn't go linear through 3.
Yeah. Well, I think most people like 4 better than 3, right?
Really?
Oh, okay. I don't know.
I guess I don't know. But
as a Tony Hawk expert who has never played 3, I'm telling you now, most people like 4. Well, I would know.
I mean, 4 is, I guess, bigger in terms of just rewards and levels, but level design, there was only like one level that I didn't like in 3. I forget what, but yeah, very, very solid. Like, that was my, I can't play Underground or the HD 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Prize, basically.
I went through the same thing, and I popped in my Xbox, like original Xbox 1 and 2 remake, into my 360 and played that, which is great. But no, like, I feel like 3 was like, again, like peak, like year 2000, like let's cram a bunch of ridiculous guest cameo characters in here. Like, didn't 3 have like Darth Maul and Bam Margera and like...
Well, Bam was...
Bam just started being in the games.
Yeah, Bam was just regular in the games. Spidey was 2. Jango Fett was 4.
Yes, Jango Fett was 4. Wolverine was in 3, I think, as well.
I didn't know Wolverine was in 1. That's hilarious.
Yeah. A Kotaku list of the best Tony Hawk games that they did last year ranked Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 as number 1 in the entire series.
Oh, shit. Who wrote that article? What's on the masthead?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't
say?
Click back.
Come on.
Here.
Is it Luke Plunkett?
Zach Zwizen.
That fuckface is a pedantic so-and-so, and I'll tell that to his face. I'm kidding. Sure, he's
you got real specific with pedantic, and then you got real vague at the end.
I couldn't finish it off.
This 5'3", I don't know, something or another.
I started strong. Couldn't bring it home.
Yeah.
So
list from fandomspot.com also ranks Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 as number 1.
Them reverts.
I'm so glad that Tim had to take time out from the middle of our podcast.
I was curious.
To prove me wrong.
Yeah.
No. I was, one, curious, and two, it is not time out. It is relevant to the conversation.
But that's surprised.
I questioned the fandom spot list because, like, Tony Hawk 2 is like 5th. Like, after both the Undergrounds.
Wow, really?
And 4. Yeah, wow. That seems...
Well, I never played the Undergrounds, and I'm not good, so... Yeah.
Tech Radar also puts Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 as number 1.
Huh. Holy shit. What did you play it on, Weiss?
I got a GameCube.
All right.
I don't know. I never really knew what if there was a consensus on what the best Tony Hawk's game, Tony Hawk
3
games.
Yeah. Cool. I guess I always assumed most people put 2.
Yeah, I always thought it was 2. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, 3, I get that you've got the reverts and the reverts into the added gameplay to extend it, but
I don't know.
Well, I think people didn't like 4 because of the how it opened things up and was less the challenge, like, run-based thing.
Yeah, it was trying different things, and they didn't all work.
Yeah.
I agree with that. 2 was kind of the end of the great soundtracks, though.
Yeah.
I feel like that's...
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no Superman, then I'm not playing it. Where were we? What? I'm loving how this is just going all freeform. You know, sometimes we just take turns like, all right, Tim, what have you been playing? But this is, we're all just chiming in. Then someone
shuts up for 45 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. This is better. This is like jazz, man. This is just freeform podcasting.
Reviews are in. Like... Worst Fat Gatsby Triple Radio ever.
I say I've played like 4 games, so when it overlaps with something you guys have played, I'm just
Dave. Well, hey, I took your advice and I spent like what $2 and purchased Doom on the Switch eShop.
Oh, excellent! After
backlog of the year,
16, yeah, or 19,
'93 Doom. I played 2016. Yes, old Doom, original Doom. Which during that podcast, I realized I have never fucking played original Doom. And I was like, I guess I should do that.
I'm already sick.
but no, it was cool. And it did give me motion sickness. Gosh. So I didn't get that far into it. Yeah.
Well, you tried.
But it was cool. Yeah, I tried. I played it for like an hour. I played, you know, a decent number of the levels and the first chapter or act or whatever it is. And I'm like, this is so cool. I wish it didn't make me want to vomit. It's the fact that, like, you know, your character, like, their gun moves all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, they're trying to simulate, you know, him walking. And, like, if it didn't do that, like, you were right about the not having to, like, look up and down.
Right.
That was why I went in on it. I was like, oh, that makes sense. But then as soon as I started moving and, like, that gun is
swaying,
just bobbing around, I'm like, this is going to get me eventually. It didn't get me that bad, but...
Is it worse when you play portably or, like, docked? I mean, in general, I guess, is your motion sickness worse on a big screen or a small
usually
screen?
Usually it is worse portably. When I was playing Paradise Killer, it was fine portable, but not on the TV, which is weird to me. Yeah, I don't know how that worked out, but I made it through the game, and I was very happy about that. I don't even know anymore. I think part of the problem is that I don't play many first-person games anymore.
Yeah.
So I think I lost, like, a tolerance that I might have built up during the 360 era when everything was first-person and, you know.
I 100% have that. When I've gone back to, you know, I've played a lot of Borderlands back in the day. I have to work up to playing Borderlands.
Train up.
What's your appetizer for Borderlands?
Borderlands used to be like I can get used to first person games by playing enough of this. I just have to like keep poking at it. Cause I went back to play just some of the DLC that piled up like even a couple years ago. I'm just like, nope, I can't do this for long.
Yeah, I don't know whether it's also because, in the intervening years, I, you know, played like 700 hours of Overwatch on a PC with a keyboard and mouse.
Yeah, that's
so I might be just more acclimated to keyboard and mouse first person now, and it's tougher to go back to controllers. I don't know, but it's like, yeah, checking out something first person kind of gives me the willies. It's a real, really don't know whether it's going to get me these days.
Well, that stinks. I'm sorry. I thank you for giving it a try. You know, at least you only had a couple of bucks.
Yeah, it was $2. No, I'm not mad about it. I finally played Doom. Finally played Doom, and I could be like, yeah, there's things in that game I think are very cool, and I would have played more of it if it didn't make me sick.
There you go. That's fair. Well, tell you what. You know what, Tim? I finally took your advice, and I mentioned this to you probably a week or two ago. I finally went ahead and bought Fight and Rage.
Yeah,
which you have been raving to me about ever since Streets of Rage 4 came out.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So look, I don't know if I'm ready to say Fight and Rage is a better game than Streets of Rage 4, but I can easily see how. I mean, it's up there. It is definitely it's astounding. It's astounding in a lot of different ways. And so I kind of went. I had to go. Like I was playing it. I'm like, holy shit, this is really good. this is a really fucking good brawler. I totally see why Tim loves this game right now. And so I went back to Streets of Rage 4. You know, I kind of switched back and forth to sort of compare them. And I feel like Streets of Rage 4 is a far more deliberate game, and its strengths, especially compared to something like Fight and Rage, Streets of Rage 4 is far more concerned with positioning. Like, the enemy AI is like explicitly designed to, have some AI, you know, really, like the fact that they don't bounce off screen, the fact that they, you know, sort of circle around you in that classic Streets of Rage 2 style that they do. I mean, the enemies in Fight and Rage don't really do that, but that's not Fight and Rage's strength. Fight and Rage's strength is that the hits are so fast and furious, and you can string together these like long combos. There is a real flow to combat in Fight and Rage. It feels fucking good. Those hits, they just keep coming and coming and coming at a pace.
All of that better. not to say that you've made an opinion, but
no, I mean, I just switching between them, the impression that I got was like Fight and Rage feels more visceral and is immediately like rewarding in a tactile sense, but Streets of Rage was just a more cerebral brawler, which is a rarity, which, you know, I'm like, I appreciate this. And I still love Streets of Rage 4. I still like the music a lot better than Tim does, but man, the music in Fight and Rage is great. Tim, when you said that the graphics were like grungy in a good way, there's something dirty about them. You are absolutely right, and I cannot put my finger on what that is. I think it's the real deep color saturation. Is part
things
of
look
it.
Dark?
Yeah, things look it's real dark, but not hard to see because because there's a lot of HDR and like color saturation. And I have never, ever seen this before in a game. I usually never play with like CRT filters on, especially ones that like bend the screen into a barrel shape, like a curved CRT screen. This is the most convincing effect. Fight and Rage has the most convincing version of this I have ever seen. And they do it by rendering a reflection of the screen against the plastic of the bezel. It's such a subtle trick, but like the bezel is, you know, it sort of faces inward toward the screen and the screen is curved, so the light would be reflecting against that plastic. It makes sense. It looks realistic. That sells the effect way more than I have ever. It's so brilliant. It's so simple and it's so brilliant that this game does that. That I leave it on because I think it looks fucking cool. Fight and Rage is, goddamn, that's spectacular. And I just stumbled upon the paths, like the alternate paths you can take. I discovered them by accident, two playthroughs in a row. And then I started reading about it, and I was like, oh, there's a million different alternate paths, and it changes according to the character that you have, like the depth of that game. I'm gushing about this
game. It's a
little
sneaky.
It is a little sneaky. And it is also like tasteless. I like that it's got this sort of like late 80s, early 90s, you know, comic book like original like TMNT, that kind of grungy, like, yeah, we're animals, but there's also like there's sexy animals, and it is tacky and tasteless in the best possible nostalgic
Dave
way.
Dave likes his sexy animal.
It doesn't feel exploitive though. Like it doesn't feel like it is dirty in a good way, like in like some underground zine. I can't explain it.
I think my thing with Streets of Rage 4, everybody was loving the look of it, and I just didn't gel with, there was something about that art direction that I think part of it is it didn't look like the characters were part of the background, like they just seemed so separated. And that kind of drives me nuts sometimes. Depends on the game, I guess.
I mean, I think the clean lines of that game, I think it works, but it definitely loses something. You know, they went to great lengths in Streets of Rage 4 to make sure that the animation was like, I don't think I'm going to explain this right, that the animation was like keyframed. Like there is no flash style tweening of the animation. Every individual frame is drawn. So that helps the look look less, because in still shots it kind of looks like a flash game, but in motion it looks, you know, everything has the proper weight to it because they fucking took the time to hand animate every single frame. But yeah, especially like switching back over to Fight and Rage, like you think like, oh, this is how games of that era, like this is how I remember them. There's something about Streets of Rage 4 that even though it's a little too perfect. It's like we're drawing everything perfectly with these clean lines, but we're drawing dirty things. We're drawing a world that's meant to look dirty, but we're drawing it in a very clean way.
Mm-hmm. They're still using modern instruments to do it, I guess, like kind of versus games that are seamless.
Seamless edit.
Yeah. Nowhere to edit.
GarageBand didn't just crash.
But, you know, I guess like people trying to make something that's reflective of what we remember versus using the tools that made them in the first place, like giving themselves the limitations versus like, you know, it's that age old argument of like how CG can be perfect. Mm-hmm. Now we can do anything with CG, but it loses its soul. You know, you don't get the fingerprints of a Wallace and Gromit. Blah, blah.
Yeah, I remember when I think I must have been listening to some behind the scenes or watching some behind the scenes, reading some behind the scenes regarding Shovel Knight and them talking about like their near, you know, almost 100% adherence to the NES color palette and what was available, and them being able to specifically say, like, here's where we diverted and added a color that, you know, is not in that palette or would not show up on an NES. But otherwise, they tried to adhere to it, which segues nicely into Cyber Shadow, which is Yacht Club's first game as a publisher that they did not develop, but fits nicely as a companion to Shovel Knight, whereas Shovel Knight is like a... I don't know, it's kind of an iteration on Mega Man, really, in that you have the different theme stages and you get different abilities, though there's a whole bunch of other shit going on in that game at the same time. Cyber Shadow is a fucking ninja game.
It's Ninja Gaiden, just saying.
It's a ninja game. You can't duck in Cyber Shadow. It's the only thing that drives me nuts about that game. I like ducking in games. It's a thing. My son... calls me out because a lot of times in 2D games, I'll just sit there. Like when I have to wait for a platform, I'm just like rapidly ducking while I'm standing there waiting. He's like, why do you keep doing that? And I'm like, I have no explanation at this point. It's just,
I'm playing a Mega Man. I'm going to jump when I enter a room. It's just, I'm going to do this.
Yeah. I always got the impression that Cyber Shadow was a little like less Ninja Gaiden, more like Natsume, like Shadow of the Ninja, like those sort of B tier ninja games.
Maybe. I mean, it does have lanterns that you hit in the background.
Oh, well, fuck it then. I'm wrong. But, if there's lanterns, then.
There's lanterns. But, you know, it feels conceptually like in the same vein of like, okay, I'm going to adhere to some kind of NES or like, I guess, maybe in between Super Nintendo, like TurboGrafx-16 graphical appearance and make a dope ass game. And it's really good. I really liked it. Weiss was comparing it to The Messenger when we were talking on Twitter about it. Dave, you love The Messenger, right?
No.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. See?
Nice. Oh, that feels good because that was a game that I like. I mean, I know it's for different reasons, but I was just sort of like, oh no, I didn't click with this game that I got for free.
I think a it was lot just of, like
my thing is just so many indie games have done the meta wink wink thing.
Oh, that's
right,
so
now
fucking tiresome.
Oh, I hate, like, it made me stop playing that game. I'm just like, I was sick of it when I played Guacamelee. It's a great game. Mm-hmm. It's still something that kind of like sticks out, and that was fucking 10-15 years ago.
Yeah, that was like,
we get it. Yeah, we played
the game. They still had some good jokes though. There's still some good jokes in Guacamelee too. Besides the point, but yeah, it's like Messenger ended up being like super divisive because of what it does. I don't know how far you got in the game, but basically like you play through that game, like half that game is like linear, like just a linear stage-based thing, and you spend most of that in an 8-bit graphical style. But then at a certain point, it switches to a 16-bit graphical style. And then shortly after that, it becomes a Metroidvania game. And yeah, because like you like loop around, and then you have to like go back through the entire world, all the stages, like both 8 and 16-bit sides.
It's
like,
ambitious as hell.
How but, organic? I guess my question is, did it do this because it was cool or because they were like, oh, it makes more sense narrative-wise?
No, it's because it's cool.
Yeah.
That's it. It's totally because it's cool.
Just
because
they're cool.
So like, there is some narrative sense to it, but the wheels came off to me like once it became like, I was like, oh my God, this is awesome. It's now a Metroidvania game. This is so cool. And then I discovered what a pain in the ass it is to get around in that world. And there was like very limited fast travel. And I was like, fuck this.
On a moment to moment level, you get to sort of switch between the 8 and 16 bit versions of the same world. And there is some really cool puzzle platforming to be derived there. So there is a gameplay reason for that to happen. And that is really cool. It's just when you sort of zoom out and look at the big picture, it's a slog. It becomes a slog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But Cyber Shadow is pretty much, so you can, as you play through the game, like pretty much every level, you get a new ability. You know, right off the bat, it's like, oh, press up and attack and you will fire a shuriken. Mm. It's like, okay, great. Yeah, I am familiar with this sort of shit. But...
is that a ninja star? Is that what you mean? A ninja star?
Yes.
Shuriken.
Shuriken. I've seen that word before. Never heard it spoken out loud.
Yeah, that shit. But as you go, like, and you unlock more abilities, suddenly you start to realize, like, oh, there's places in previous levels where I could go back and, you know, unlock alternate paths, and you can do that to get, you know, health bonuses and magic bonuses and shit. But you can, there's like a fast travel at the end of at every level. But it's just really fun to play. Like, they give you a lot of fun abilities. I mean, you can, you know, jump off walls and climb up walls like you could in like a Mega Man X sort of deal. Mm. But you get this air dash attack that is really cool and really fun because you can chain it.
That's what I've seen gifs of, honestly.
Yeah, that's like, you get like about halfway through the game, you get like a ton of power-ups all at once. And I think that like you get like the double jump and you get that and like a bunch of tools. It just drops in your lap. And it's like for a story reason. And so, yeah, you start like double jumping around, like dashing at enemies, jumping again, chaining these things together, just flying through areas. Once you get the hang of them after dying like a bunch of times, but it looks really cool and feels really good. And just, yeah, like probably like within 15 minutes of playing that game, I was like, oh, this all feels right. Like all the jumping and attacking and stuff, like all the shit feels the way I feel like it should feel. So this is going to be a good time. And it is a good time.
So, Tim, I want to ask you about the structure of the game again. You touched on it briefly. So it's a level-based structure, but there are multiple branching paths. Is it like a Dracula X kind of situation where after you beat a level, you can like sort of go back and just dive back into previous levels and find alternate paths? How does that work?
Well, the world is continuous.
Oh, okay.
So like you could just run from level 1 to 2 to 3, et cetera. But it does have fast travel points, so you can just jump around. It gives you a percentage of what has been found in that level.
Okay.
But it doesn't branch like from like, you know, level 2 doesn't branch to it, like 3A and 3B. It just comes, there's just other stuff to find.
Okay. So
when you
go
back.
Structurally, I mean, that kind of sounds like The Messenger.
But it's really not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Well, because
okay,
it doesn't
Tim.
Force you
okay.
to. Like, well, no. Because The Messenger forced you to do that shit, right?
Right.
Like, you had to. You don't have to do that in this game. It's more like revisiting stages in like, Mega Man X to get more power-ups.
All right.
You know?
That makes sense.
Just to make yourself stronger. You don't have to go back. And it's not like, like, it doesn't loop back in on itself.
They just happen to be contiguous.
Yeah, this happened to be
Yoshi coins.
And yeah. Yeah, I didn't do a
Yoshi
ton
coins.
Of that. Yeah, I replayed a couple like of the early stages because I was like, okay, well, I can fly through these in probably like a few minutes.
Right.
That's the big difference for me. You go into a level with The Messenger and you're like dicking around for what felt like forever to me. But these, you're just flying through these levels, especially once you're powered up. Like, you are just zinging through so fast. You know, it wasn't a big deal. Game
that lets you get that strong. I feel like a lot of games don't.
Yeah.
The challenge, the same level as you. Nah, let me get overpowered at the end.
Yeah, I mean, it's still, the last couple levels are still pretty tough. But, like, yeah, when you go back, it's like, oh, this is just cake. And I don't know if it has a new game plus, but probably not. But I'll probably replay it, and I'm sure a lot of things will feel a lot easier. Or might be harder, because I'm like, oh, I can't do my ninja dash. Oh, no. It's so bad. But, yeah, it's a cool game. I really liked it.
I am absolutely thrilled that the reviews seem to be, you know, agreeing with you, and that, you know, because this, if the reviews came out and they were like, well, it's no Shovel Knight, but I guess it's okay, you know, it's just another 8-bit throwback,
right?
But the reviews really seem to be like, this is a really great compliment to Shovel Knight. The quality is excellent, but it's a very different game. I'm heartened by hearing that, and excited to try it.
Compliments Shovel Knight. Yeah, it meets, like, you know, a level of quality. Like, if you had said this was developed by Yacht Club, I would be like, oh yeah, this makes sense.
Right.
But yeah, no, it's some guy who just, you know, made something in that kind of that wheelhouse, and they, it's a smart publishing pickup for them. Compliments them very well.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Somebody else talk about something.
I mean, I played through Hades.
Hades.
Whatsoever. It's a good game. I mean, I agreed pretty closely to whatever you tweeted about. Like, it's not like my top 10 game of all time, but it's pretty much like a perfectly made game. Like, every aspect of that game is just exactly what it should be. My only, like, thing personally is, like, a game that needs you to, like, keep playing and beating it, like, that much, I do feel like I'm missing out on, like, so much, because technically I am, you know.
Yeah.
I beat the game once, maybe twice, I think just the once. And, you know, I've gone through the dungeon quite a bit. I've put a lot of time in. I'm never going to get, you know, the story out of everybody. There's just so much.
There's a lot.
I would love a wrap up movie. Like, I need I need credit so I can move on with my life. It's just so hard. Even with I mean the worst case scenario for me was Fez, because that one felt like, I need to play this again. But, you know, I even got it with, like, Dragon Quest. They'd want you to keep playing. I'll just say that. I don't know if you beat it or not.
Nah, I beat it the second. I know that I have more to do in Dragon Quest XI. I know. Yep. I know that I do.
That's where I
and I will get back to it at some point, because I have had people be like, oh, no, that's the stuff you have to do. And I'm like, come on, man. I played 70 hours of this fucking game already.
like in that one, I was specifically like, it kind of negates a couple things, too. And that kind of annoyed me. Just a little bit, or at least change the story a little bit. So I'm very single focused on a game. Like, I want to, like, play it, and it's just such a, like, I can sit back and relax and watch those credits.
You like that closure.
I love that closure.
Yeah, it's hard for me to juggle two experiences at once. I want to end one. I want to immerse myself in one thing. Understand it fully, and then move on to the next thing.
Right. If they're completely different genres, I can do it. Like, I can do a puzzle game and an RPG, but, you know.
Yeah. Whatever. I've been struggling to beat Horus, which is, you know, this British throwback pixel platformer on Switch that received accolades from a very specific demographic of British critics, for whom it really struck their nostalgia. And, you know, it is an excellent game, and I'm really enjoying it, but I know that I'm in the end game section of it right now, or at least I feel like I must be. And it's the platform.
What chapter are you on?
I'm on, I don't remember. It's been a couple of weeks since I booted it up. I'm in the, did you beat it?
No, I stopped playing it.
Okay, yeah. I am in, so it's truly become a Metroidvania now, like with a Metroidvania map and everything. But the platforming itself is like just hardcore Super Meat Boy, you know, like punishingly difficult.
Well, I would say like the obstacles are, but I don't know if the controlling of the Horus is as tight as Meat Boy is.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't think it's bad in any way, but it's yeah, I am finding that I am just not up to the task more than the fact that I am not up to the task to overcome these challenges. It feels like I'm butting up against some game design, like this feels unfair. This feels unfair.
So I dropped off around chapter, I don't know, like six or seven or something that. Okay. It was after you break into the studio to kidnap what's his face.
Yeah.
So that's because I wish this game had a pure story mode where I could just watch the story unfold, because I really like it and the cutscenes. And like,
I'm thinking I'm just going to finish it up on YouTube.
And then like, I don't like actually the parts where you play that much, but I think they're very neat. Yes. So, you know, you have the platformer parts, but then it's like they slip in, you know, rhythm games and like breakout clones.
Yeah.
And not just when, you know, where you're in an arcade and you're going to play an old 8-bit game. It's just like they slip all these other things in, and that's really cool. But then just generally speaking, I'm just not as interested in running around and collecting junk.
Yep. It's finally becoming, I stuck with it for a long time and I've really enjoyed it, but it's finally just becoming more of a slog than is worth it. So I don't know if I can go back to it at this point, unfortunately.
Yeah. I'm trying to recognize better when I am done with a game instead of trying to like force myself through and be like, oh, well, I started this, so I gotta finish it.
Yeah.
And just like walk away.
Easy now. I guess it's the same thing with dramatic television, where it's just sort of like, are you not holding my attention? Nope, there's a thousand other things I have.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was just like, well, I tried you out. So, okay, I did the thing. All right, we're cool. I can move on to something else that will hold my attention better, perhaps.
Yeah.
I think I'm ready.
You go ahead.
Another RPG that I've tried, I think this is only the second time, but you know, I put another 20 hours into the original Suikoden, which is a perfectly good game. Mm-hmm. I just really want to play 2.
Yeah, that's okay. Like, okay, so Suikoden 2, I made that list of like games that I've never played that I want to play. Suikoden 2 is on it, but I feel like I should play 1 first, even though I'm sure you don't really have to. It's just like my own personal OCD about it.
No, same. And that's why I'm just sort of like, I just want to power through, and it's not a game that I can just like power
through. Suikoden's not that long, I guess.
That's what I keep hearing.
Yeah. Well, not that long, though. Even a not that long game, though, was still like 12 hours of your life where you could be playing something.
Well, you know, like Suikoden is like 20, 30 hours.
Exactly. Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. It's not nothing. But compared to a lot of RPGs,
I'll get back. That was part of me going through games that I bought on PS3 forever ago that I never got. The other one I was playing for a bit and I still want to get back to, I just got distracted, was original Klonoa.
I just played that the other day.
It's great. I was so impressed with that level design. Holy fuck.
It is pretty cool. Yeah.
So this is original Klonoa, right? Not Klonoa Wii?
Yeah, this correct. Is Klonoa, yeah, the Road to Phantom Isle.
Yeah, the one on PlayStation, that's what I mean. Not the remake.
Oh, the Wii one? I didn't know the Wii one was a remake.
Yeah, the Wii one's a remake of the first game.
Oh.
Yeah, I think I either played or watched a little of that one and didn't, I don't know. I wasn't clicking with that one as much as, like, I like what this one's doing. Especially because, like, apparently I don't like 3D platformers that aren't Mario or Psychonauts for the most part. Very hard for me to click with. But because this is kind of a 2D platformer.
Oh yeah.
Way much, way nicer. It's just fucking hard. Like, that's where I got.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, I guess I didn't enjoy it enough to keep playing after the first boss. Like, I was up late one night and I was like, yeah, I'm going to do this. And like, I played it for maybe an hour and I'm like, oh, this is really cute and fun. But it didn't really, I don't know, it didn't strike me as so extraordinary. Mm-hmm. But I know that like Jeremy Parrish stands real hard for it. And so I know that there's something there that must be. I have nothing against it. It just didn't, I don't know.
There is a weird magic to just the feeling of that game mm-hmm. that I was getting. There's just something about like the choice of their designs that are cutesy, but they're also a little more horror than they need to be.
Yeah, like, there is a bit of a dark bent to that game.
Yeah, it just like pops up in weird places, and the music and the sound design in general is just very good for PS1.
Oh, it's such a gorgeous PS1 game.
Yeah. So I want to go back to it.
Yeah.
But I mean, those are the things that got abandoned when Hades and Return to Oberdin last year.
Fuck yeah.
That just ate up everything once I got that. I haven't like dove into a game like that in a while.
Yeah, I devoured that game very quickly.
Yeah, that was one that I'm just like, this is problematic. This is just taking up every free moment. But
it's real.
Yeah, that game rules.
I need to obtain that game in some on any platform. It's one of those PC games that, like, you know, I feel like, I mean, it's on everything now, and like I feel like I should have owned it on something by now, but I don't.
No, they haven't bundled it. I don't recall seeing it for free or in a bundle or anything like that. Or
Lucas Pope is protective of his.
Papers, Please has been out and about. I don't know if it's ever been like out. Well, whatever. It's besides the point. Yeah,
I mean, I bought it on, there was an anniversary sale. That's why I bought it.
Yeah. I played, I guess, speaking of 2.5D platformers, I played Yooka-Laylee and the Impossible Lair.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was on Game Pass, and it's been on Game Pass, and I'm trying to actually try out some of these fucking games that are on Game Pass that just sit there.
It takes my attention during Games Done Quick. Like, that was the most interested I think I was in it when I watched some of that.
Yeah, it's fun. It's, I don't know what the... Because I thought the first one was pretty much straight, like, Banjo-Kazooie.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing. But the second one, you know... the second one, the Impossible Lair, is a 2.5D platformer. It is not, like, a...
And I remember people saying that they liked that because it sort of streamlined the... the sprawling and right. That's what people said. Like, yeah, this is a more concise experience and it's better.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I played almost the whole game in like a matter of like 4 or 5 hours. So yeah, it's more concise, but it blends. There is, and I never played the first game obviously, cause I don't know anything about it. It blends like there's kind of like almost a Zelda-esque little overworld that you explore to unlock levels, and there's secrets hidden away. And like, there's a tree over here with bomb berries. So you have to grab a bomb off of this and run over here to bomb a wall or, set these bushes on fire to move them out of the way. But there's lots of fun exploration, like 3D exploration stuff, going on out there. They have this idea where, cause the levels present themselves as like storybooks, and you can affect the storybooks in different ways to create different levels. So there's just the easiest one is there's one that's like in a riverbed early on. And then like if you divert the water so it goes over the level, then it becomes a watery level. So each level kind of has two sides. But yeah, it's and then once you get into the 2.5D shit, it's like, oh, this is now like Donkey Kong Country Returns is what it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
Like straight up shit with like shooting yourself around in barrels sometimes. It's like, but that's what it feels like. And yeah, it was fun and it didn't overstay its welcome. And then I started to try to tackle the eponymous Impossible Lair. And I was like, nah, I'm good.
I've had enough.
I'm sure I could, I'm sure I could do this. It would take me too many tries to actually get good enough at it, and I don't want to. So, nah, I'm good. Moving on. Next See, game.
That's what's nice about Game Pass.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
no obligation.
Yeah.
So we were talking earlier about retro throwback games that have that wink and a nod to your retro nostalgia and the gags and the jokes and stuff. There's a game called Agelos, which I've had my eye on for a long time and only finally bought.
And how to spell that?
it's like Greek. It's like A-G-G-E-L-O-S. Agelos.
Okay.
It is a Wonder Boy clone for, I think, is the closest compared. It's a Wonder Boy clone with a lot of Zelda 2 blended in. And I remember reading that part of the praise of this game was that it is all killer, no filler. I don't want to say slavishly devoted to its 8-bit aesthetic, but the aesthetic it's devoted to is decidedly Master System. Like, it's more colorful than a Nintendo game. The colors are more saturated. So it's a style of 8-bit throwback that you don't see a lot in this.
Once Altered Beast, basically. Yes.
What?
Maybe because I always think of Altered Beast specifically as Master System, but just like Master System plus Greek to me is Altered Beast.
Okay. I mean, it really does. I mean, it looks like a Wonder Boy. Like, it looks like Wonder Boy 3 on Master System. And maybe more the Master System version than the TurboGrafx version. And it's great because there's none of that shit. There's no jokes. There's no characters gabbing. All the text is wonderfully brief and like sort of has the same like clumsily translated. I believe the developers, their native language must be Spanish or Brazilian or something. Because there's some like
Brazilian is not a language.
yeah.
Portuguese,
that was
forgive me.
Than I expected, but expected.
But anyway, yeah, there is some stilted translation, which rings very true to the era. And, you know, you get to the point where you can fast travel anywhere you need to on the map very quickly.
Like the messenger?
Yeah, I guess. the part of the funny thing about it is that you don't get a map. You don't get a real deed. You get sort of this very vague hand-drawn overview of what the map is, but you do not get a like screen square by square map to follow. So you That's sort rough. Of have to remember, but the world is pretty compact. It turns out the world is compact enough that you should be able to remember where you're going. And if you can't, fast travel just makes it easy. Once that is introduced, at exactly the point where the world gets so sprawling that you might not remember how to get back somewhere. That's right, when you get fast travel and you're like, okay, that solves that problem.
Nice.
So it's one of these very basic, you know, I mean, so in that sense, it's not really a true Metroidvania. I guess it's more like Wonder Boy, which is hard for me to make that comparison because I've never actually played one of those Wonder Boy games. I assume this is what it's like. But it's great. I'm having a great time with it because it really is just sort of like, it's just good platforming, good, you know, melee combat with a couple of spells. It feels like a version of Zelda 2 that is more streamlined down to just the good stuff. You know, there is both a downward thrust and an up thrust, so that's why it feels like Zelda 2. The towns are a lot like Zelda 2. It's great. I'm having a real good time with it. I don't know if I'll finish it. It's short. It's only 5 or 6 hours in total, so I hope I will finish it. But yeah, it's called Agelos, and it's on, I think, just PC and Switch.
I've seen you playing it, and I didn't know what it was until now.
That is what it is.
Fantastic.
And, I guess I'll transition. I don't have much to say on it, but I picked up the that Castlevania collection. I didn't know that was M2, or I would have gotten it earlier, but that was on sale for like $5.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Shit on there. So I'm kind of like picking at Castlevania 2 before bed now, because I've never gone all the way through it. And of course, also Belmont's Revenge, because I really like that game.
That's a great game.
It's a good little collection. Yeah, I ripped through, I was talking about that last episode. Ripped through a bunch of those games last year. That I had never played.
A bunch of people were doing them Castlevanias for October.
Kind of thing. Yeah, right. I did Castlevania in July.
Ah. Hipster.
Yeah, I guess so. Just like, oh man.
Yeah. They just put together a fucking great. It's just effortlessly good whenever they do anything. Just no complaint.
Tim and I talked about this collection last time, my one complaint about it, and it's such a minor complaint, and it's totally just me, is that I mostly play my Switch docked. On the TV, there is no option to scale it to fit the screen. I don't want it to stretch widescreen. I just don't want black borders on the top and bottom. M2 will only do integer scaling, which is good. It makes sure everything looks good and that there's no shimmering. There's no pixel distortion. I understand why that's good in theory. I would like the option to make that image a little bit bigger on a screen.
Well, they give you so many viewing options.
I know they give you some. they don't give you the option to make it as large as possible without stretching it out to widescreen, which is an abomination and no one should do. In handheld mode, because the Switch's own screen is only 720p, it scales perfectly. It fills the Switch's entire screen. Not the entire screen. You know, again, it's not widescreen, but top to bottom. The top to bottom resolution completely fills it. But on a 4K TV, it doesn't.
I see.
Like, there's all this unused space on the top and bottom that I would really like to scale out proportionally, but it won't. There's no way to do that. And that's my only complaint about the collection.
I have thought about I'm only playing on a Switch Lite
these
days, and I barely play anything, aside from a short hike. I haven't played anything on a computer aside from testing things out. And I do, you know, miss playing on a TV. It is a very different experience in a way. You know, before there was a pandemic, I was ready to just take my Switch to coffee shops. That's been fun. But it does take a little of the dramatic prestige out of titles.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I think that's why I mostly play docked. Although I asked for Christmas, I asked for and got a Satisfy grip for my Switch, which everyone says is the best grip that adds like handles to the side. And so that plus my Hori D-pad left Joy-Con has, you know, really made portable play a lot more appealing to me because it's much more comfortable, and having a real D-pad, you know, makes playing all those retro games and those collections a lot better.
Well, that's why I got the Lite. I just didn't love the feel of the Joy-Cons, like, just portable.
Yeah.
Just didn't good. Love the Lite aside, you know, I just wish I could pop it on a TV.
I know. That's the only thing.
Yeah.
That's why it's cheaper.
Yeah.
$100 cheaper.
Yeah.
Can't really dismiss it.
Remember way back at the start of the episode when we were talking about how all those games were delisted from the 3DS eShop?
Yes.
Did something happen while we were here?
No. They came back, but before they did, you know, I sort of panic bought at least one thing that was on my list, and that was a game that had been on my wish list for a long time. It's called Pinball Pulse: The Ancients Beckon. And I wanted it because it's a pinball game by Fuse Games, the makers of Metroid Prime Pinball. And it is very much a table like that, only better. What I didn't know about Fuse Games is that is the new name for a reconstituted team consisting of the people that made the classic Pro Pinball series for DOS in the mid-90s, which are some of my personal favorite pinball games. Pinball,
shit you grew up with, right?
I did not. I'd never discovered them until, you know, the past decade. But Pro Pinball Time Shock is like, oh, it's so fucking good. It's it is one of the best video pinball games of all time, and you know, it's like from 94 or 95, and the physics easily stand toe to toe with anything Farsight or Zen Studios has done with virtual pinball in the modern era. So this is a game by some fucking pinball experts, and it is a fucking amazing pinball game. I think I might like it a little better than Metroid Prime Pinball, which I love. It is way closer to a being like a recreation of a real pinball table. It is not a real pinball table, but it's, you know, patterned after. It's more in the, you know, Farsight Studios or Zen Pinball mold, where they're like making a fake but real pinball table.
Doesn't have Ridley.
No Ridley. No, there's, yeah. There's, so there's nothing on this. There's nothing on this table that could not be done on a real physical table is the thing. So, but it's, it's so good. The physics are great. it's real rampy, you know, it's got that sort of medieval madness, you know, era of design where the, like the ramp, there's a lot of good ramps, a lot of everything feels really good. This is a fucking fantastic pinball game. It is $5 on the DSiWare shop. I recommend it to every living human on the planet. Because I keep my 3DS by my bed. It's my night. It's my nighttime game system, my before bed. And so it's, you know, squeezing out a couple of rounds of a fantastic pinball table before bed. I'm glad that I finally snagged it before it possibly disappears forever. I'm glad it hasn't, but it might.
Have they kept up on modern pinball games since those Zen collections some years ago, or is it kind of been a drought? It's not a genre that I poke at.
Well, I am frustrated with it because I vastly prefer Farsight's Pinball Arcade engine to Zen Studios' Pinball FX engine, and Farsight Studios lost the Williams license. So Zen Studios picked it up and recreated all the Williams tables in Pinball FX. I haven't tried them. I'm sure they're fine, but I never really loved Pinball FX and any of Zen Studios stuff. It felt off to me. It's totally just a preference in, you know, like which feeling do you prefer? I just preferred Farsight Studios stuff. So Farsight Studios now just, you know, if you bought the tables, I guess you still own them if you bought them and downloaded them, but they're just not available anymore, which is a shame. And the only other like modern video pinball game I've been interested in picking up is one that I've seen called Demon's Tilt, which is meant to be like a spiritual successor.
That's on Game Pass.
I got to
try that.
Oh, yeah? Okay. Well, please do try it. Let me know if it is a...
Make it my business.
It's like it's clearly meant to be a spiritual sequel to Devil's Crush, but it's got like some shmup elements to it. Like there's some like bullet hell kind of things going on that sort of makes me think it might not be my thing. So I don't know. That's
oh,
all.
Oh, no, wait. Left Game Pass. Fuck.
Ah, damn it. All right.
I was like, that was one of the ones that it was on there forever and I had it downloaded forever and then...
Cannot be our canary in the coal mine on that then.
Well, that's the problem, is that's why I'm trying to actually play the things that I have on Game Pass rather than pretending like they're going to be there forever. Which I can say, side note, I no longer have the world record for Metroid Prime Pinball multi-mission.
Oh, no.
You know, some motherfucker came in last September and just wiped my ass.
Oh, jeez. How are you adjusting to life as a non-famous person?
Well, I just found out, and I never really officially submitted it, but now I can't sit here and like say, like, oh, my score is way higher than the one on Twin Galaxies. No, fucking...
You've been shittier, Billy.
Holy shit. Yeah, my God. That's insane. Yeah, okay, whatever. Anyways, yeah, so anyway, in trying to get things off my Game Pass queue before they leave Game Pass, I started Spiritfarer.
Oh, okay, yeah.
That looks pretty.
Which was a game that came out last year and looks very pretty, and is about, you know, shuffling souls off to their, you know, final resting place, though not before you boat around with them for a while. So it's like a kind of a combination. It's I guess a management sim at its core, in that you have your boat and you're trying to build structures and collect resources to make your people happy and give them food that they like. And
Tim, will you keep talking about this while I go pee?
Okay. Oh Jesus, Dave. Fuck.
I was gonna do the same thing, but Dave beat me.
You should have just taken a break. I could have refilled my water. What the fuck? We're idiots. Now we're all going to leave in turn to do some liquid-related business. But
well, that's your Spiritfarer transition.
Yeah. So, yeah, well, it's funny because the second game I've played in recent memory featuring Charon, the ferryman of the dead, because he's there at the beginning of the game to pass the torch to you.
Of course.
But, yeah, it's this really... you know, nice fuzzy feelings game where you're picking up these dead people and ferrying them around, and like you give them hugs and lots of talking about feelings and death and shit like that. And it's very pleasant.
Pleasant is the indie word I kind of latched to these last few years, I feel like.
Yeah, I played their previous two games were Jotun, which is a... boss battle game, and then they made Sundered, which I did not fucking like. You know, it was a studio that I never played Jotun, but it was like, oh, they make really good art, and I didn't like Sundered, so I, you know, never played Jotun, so I didn't really have much of an opinion on them. But like this game, like is much more enjoyable, and the art is fantastic.
Yeah,
because you get this like little like thing called the Everstone, I think, is kind of like your tool for your all tool for it's this little glowing orb, and it'll turn into like a fishing line like a scythe for cutting you know, crops or a saw or whatever. But it's just like all those animations are really nice, and it just looks really cool, and just like all the characters in the game are like look really good, and it's like a cool looking game. It's pleasant to play. I've really been enjoying it quite a bit. I've only played it for like a couple hours, 2-3 hours, but I really like it so far.
I like that level of detail.
Yeah.
Where it's not just like, well, the boat rides look cool. No.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's like, and there's lots of detail in like the little rooms on the boat too. And it's interesting. It's a really cool game. I like it. So I'm trying to beat the shit out of it before I, before it leaves Game Pass.
Beat the shit out of that game.
Beat the shit out of it.
Assault it.
Yeah. Give it the old what for.
I want to know it was hurt.
Speaking of things that look really good. Well, you know, I am an owner of a PlayStation 5. God help me.
Slow clap.
I still have the 3 hooked up, which is my Blu-ray player mostly.
Yeah, I bought a PlayStation 3 last year too, because my old PlayStation 3 was dead. Oh. So I was like, oh, I need to get PlayStation 3, so I got something to play Scott Pilgrim on.
Yeah. You got it for... Oh, yeah.
I got a handful of PS3 games as well and other Shatter. Stuff.
But... I need something to play Shatter on.
Oh, fucking Shatter. Yeah, so I went to Oogie Games when like they reopened after the first quarantine and got myself a... I got a PS3 Slim, actually.
Ooh.
For like... under $100, it was around $100. I got a good deal because it didn't have like a power cord, or it didn't have the charging cord for the controller. That's what it didn't have. And I'm like, whatever, I got that. Fuck it.
Yeah, there's a thousand. I have like
a mini USB. Yeah, that's all that is.
Yeah, but yeah, he like knocked like $10, $10, $20 off just because it was missing that. It's like, whatever, cool.
A slim, not a super slim.
No, it's a super slim. Sorry.
Oh, it's a super slim.
I had a slim. It is a super slim. All yes. Right. Yeah, all right. Yeah,
we also ordered Scott Pilgrim too, by the way.
Yes, I did order Scott Pilgrim. I don't know if Dave did, but I ordered a physical copy of Scott Pilgrim off of Limited Run Games.
Oh,
as did I. I did the tier with a couple pins.
It's kind of symbolic for just because that game was, it felt like the poster boy for great game that got delisted and you can't buy anywhere.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Felt the same.
Mm-hmm.
Physical media.
Yeah. Thought Dave was going to say something there.
I know.
I didn't want to derail the conversation, but I didn't. And I have not yet bought the digital re-release of it because so many people going back to it are like, Yeah, Brawler design about 10 years ago was really fixated on like grinding. It was fixated on like, you know, just generating, you know, getting money and a lot of people have been down on it lately.
I mean, well, I get it. That game was grindy at the time, and I remember that. Like, when you first start, like, I remember playing the first couple levels a few times just to get money to try to, like, power up the character a little bit. But then, like, once you get going,
right,
it's pretty fantastic. But, and yeah.
I enjoy the gameplay enough, and I haven't gotten to play River City Girls yet and a couple others. So, like, you know, I don't have those.
Have you tried Fight and Rage yet, Weiss? Because you should try Fight and Rage.
Well, since you heard the good word about Fight and Rage. Yeah. I mean, I played through Scott Pilgrim 4 times with each character, and then I never played the DLC characters, so that is still something that awaits me. But
yeah. I feel like I did. I don't
know. I didn't get it. But yeah, so yeah, I can wait for the physical version to try that game out.
Yeah.
But
I don't mean to bash it. That game held a very special place in my heart, and I will definitely pick up the re-release at some point. I haven't been in a hurry because honestly, it just people have been sort of rough on it lately, and I've been like,
believe that, you know, because this game has gotten a lot of hype over the last 5 years,
right?
That
and so if people are coming to it fresh, especially if they just played Streets of Rage 4 last year, and this is Scott Pilgrim's a bit less of a, you know, jump in and go have fun. Like, you got to grind a little bit and power up your character a little bit. Like, I could see how some people would be a little bummed.
I'm glad that Double Dragon Neon has gotten a re-release, too. That game deserves a second life.
That was exactly what I was just going to say. The last, like, beat 'em up I dove into was Neon.
A certain character from Neon might show up in River City Girls somewhere.
I'm not shocked.
It just tickled me because I'm like, oh, somebody else cares about that guy. Like, fantastic.
Not that it could be anybody else.
Yeah. I did. I got a PS5 and I've had this thing for.
Oh yeah, that's what you were talking about.
Yeah, I was talking about the PS5. Remember that? Yeah.
Okay, taking my break.
Yeah. Bye. I played. Talked about Astro Boy on our Games of the Year.
Astro, that's not what
Astro Bot. Yeah, not boy. Bot. Astro Bot, which is excellent. But yeah, you know, I had bugs. That was like 3 months ago. Yeah, bombed through Bugsnax, played through Miles Morales, played through Demon Souls, of course. I've not really gone into depth on the system on our show yet, and it's like 9:45, so maybe I won't tonight. But yeah, so far I haven't had any problems with the system. I've really enjoyed it. I've heard about some people having problems with it, like crashing out of rest mode or having issues with an external hard drive, but I have not had any problems with any of that shit.
Here's something I've been curious about. Outside of Astrobot, have you had experiences with the DualSense controller that makes you say, "Oh yeah, this was worth redesigning the whole controller"?
Yeah, I mean, not a lot of games have taken advantage of it in a significant way yet, and I've only played so many games besides that. Mm. Like in Demon's Souls in particular, I used the feel, like there was a feel to the trigger when you would draw a bow. There was a feeling of resistance to that, which I used to know when my draw was at full power. So I did, you know, integrate that into my gameplay experience. So Control Ultimate Edition was one of the freebies for PlayStation Plus this month.
Right.
Which I did. I love Control. And then I bought the DLC. And then they announced that, like, you had to buy the Ultimate Edition to get the next gen versions. And that made me mad.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, I had it on Xbox. So it's not like that was going to transition to a next gen console that I actually own. But whatever, and then it was free, so I'm like, all right, I want to download this to check out how this game looks, because it's supposed to look damn fine.
Yeah.
you know, upgraded to a PS5. But yeah, I didn't realize they actually added some haptic stuff to that game. Yeah. So it has like the pitter patter of your little feet as you're walking around. It's got some resistance on the trigger when you pull it. And now suddenly, like, yeah, I'm going to play through all of Control because that game looks freaking awesome.
I really want to play Control, especially I wanted to, and then they had DLC with Alan Wake, and then I went.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of the sneaky secret, is that Control is a sequel to Alan Wake.
I kind of got that.
Yeah, well, yeah, once they did that DLC, it was more obvious. But like, as I was playing through the game, I'm like, you know, this makes a lot of things in Alan Wake make a lot more sense. And then it's like literally referenced in notes later on in the game. I'm like, okay, yeah, okay.
I'm excited to finally try it, but I'm a little worried about how it's going to run on my, you know, on my base PS4.
Yeah, I think you should be worried about that. I think that's a valid worry. Apparently that game, I don't know if they cleaned it up. I heard that like the base console versions on last gen were kind of shady.
Yeah.
I played it on an X and I thought it was mostly fine. Mm-hmm. It still had some issues here and there, just like loading in or like pausing and unpausing. It would like kind of like for a second. But I don't know what they've done with that, but the, you know, on PS5 in performance mode, like it runs buttery smooth at 60 frames per second. And like all the effects that are popping off when you're blowing up enemies, and it looks real good.
So what is, all right, and I have not seen a PS5 in action. I've barely seen a PS4 in action. What is the wow factor now? Because they look exactly like games on my PS3 from here.
For me, it is that it's just that they run at 60 frames per second. Like, okay. That is the big difference, is that I'm seeing a lot more consistent frame rate performance on a console that I have not seen before. Mm-hmm. And like, yeah, like the graphical effects and stuff look great. I mean, Demon's Souls looked incredible in motion. Like you can turn on ray tracing in some games, which is the natural lighting effect that's like all the rage in new PC graphics cards, but then your frame rate goes down and I'm like, nah, I want that tasty frame rate. But yeah, no, it looks really good. Even as a step up above an Xbox One X, like it's clearly a step in terms of the smoothness of the frame rate and how everything looks. But yeah, you're not seeing the leaps.
Yeah,
they ain't big leaps anymore.
I'm trying not to be as cranky old person, but you know, I also think about like every generation, like being excited per generation until the last like couple.
I have long felt the exact same way, especially that from the advent of what was essentially the HD generation, like 360 to, you know, the previous generation to the current generation. I guess part of it is that especially the 360 PS3 generation went on for so long.
Yeah.
That I sort of became accustomed to that level. So it wasn't until... So last week when I booted up some like the PlayStation, like that was one of the systems that I chose. I'm going to play PlayStation 3. And the problem with PlayStation 3 specifically is that it really doesn't have much of a personality. It is a console from that generation that runs games that were made in that generation. And that is it. And so I tried to like, you know, I started by playing Double Dragon Neon because I hadn't played that in a while. And that was a lot of fun. Then I was like, all right, no, I need to play a game that was like a PlayStation 3 game that will be indicative of like what games were like of this era and what the graphics look like. So I tried a game that I had not tried yet that I got on PlayStation Plus years ago, SSX, the PlayStation 3 like reboot of SSX. And what struck me when I saw it was like, so this game is I think like 11 years old now, which I think about games from 2010 still looking great. And I was like, yeah. Oh, wow. I can even just compare it to the PS4, the couple of PS4 games I've played lately. The textures especially textures are real muddy when I go back to Xbox 360, PlayStation 3 era, because those systems just did not have enough RAM to load in high quality textures. So I'm like, oh wow, these textures look real blurry. Like, this is how I remember PlayStation 2 games looking. I can even tell that there's a reduced level of detail in character models, like stuff that never occurred to me at the time. Character models looked real full and vibrant, but going back now after having spent a long time away, I totally see the difference.
Yeah,
it was eye opening for me, believe, because I, for a long time, was always like, eh.
Right. And I mean, the games I go for usually aren't like the AAA game, you know, I'm not playing.
Yeah.
So it's been so long. I mean, Persona 5, I guess, is the last, you know, I got the PS3 version anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So
even games, modern games on a modestly powerful system like Switch, you know, going from like Super Mario Odyssey back to something from the 360 PS3 generation is like, oh, wow. There's definitely a clear difference here.
Except Mario Galaxy, that game still looks sweet.
Mario Galaxy totally looks sweet.
That holds up 100%.
Yep.
But, you know, it's not trying to look realistic. Yeah, when I last popped, like, a game into my PS3, this was before I got the Super Slim, so we're talking, like, 2019, maybe. Like, I put a game in. One of them was Heavenly Sword. But there was something else I played at the same time. Might have been, like, one of the Souls games I put in there. I'm like, is there something wrong with my PS3? Does this look like total shit? Like, what the fuck is this? This doesn't look like how I remember. Or this looking good? What the fuck? Yeah. Things might not have aged as well. I think I had that moment at some point, like going back to a PS2 game and then like going into the UI of the PS2 game and being like, oh, things have changed a lot that I did not give credit for in certain ways.
Well, something that's there's a huge, because I used to feel this way about PS2 to PS3, you know, mm-hmm. especially, you know, playing like a PS2 versus like a 360 on like a standard def TV. It's like, PS2 looks. But so having recently gone back and trying some PS2 emulation on my PC, which, and, you know, I've got a PC that can run PS2 games pretty well. The thing with PS2 games is like, a lot of them only output at like 480i, so you need to crank up the internal resolution, or else you're going to get like this interlaced, like shimmery kind of look. Yeah. But also the motion blur, like the frame rate was so low and stuttery. PS2 games were programmed with, and it's hard coded into the games, that motion blur. And so going back to them now, I mean, they look ridiculous. They're really difficult to look at and play. Which is a
even
shame.
Even as pretty as Colossus is, like, I remember the motion. There was a lot of motion blur in them, like those types of games.
I never played that on PS2. I only played the PS3 re-release.
Gotcha.
Not the PS4 remake.
Not the PS4 remake. Not to be confused. Haven't tried that. Played it on PS3.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, so I'm, you know, that generational difference, like by contrast, emulating like GameCube games, you know, they're pretty perfect. You know, they scale up real, especially again, Nintendo's first party stuff scales up real nice on a modern television. The textures are, you know, more basic, but the art design, you know, a game with good art design fucking holds up. So it's, yeah, and so that's the thing that strikes me most about the 360 PS3 era, is that they were trying to use more realistic looking textures than the PS2 GameCube Xbox era, but they didn't have the RAM. Like, so the textures are just, they're blurry, muddy messes. And especially considering so much of the art design at that time was like gray and brown.
Yeah.
that does not help things.
I guess that could be analogous to PS1 trying to do way more than it could at the time in the realistic vein. I got myself a little Trinitron to hook my old shit up, so now I can play Zapper games again.
Oh, wow. That's, I've been trying to figure out a way to, like...
Yep. Now I can play Gumshoe. You know?
Thank God. You know, Gumshoe.
It's been so long since I've played anything on a CRT, though. It was worth it. Like, it does feel better.
How big is it?
Shit, what was 17? I think 17, okay. 19. Something like that.
Nice.
Come, I can carry it myself.
Okay.
I think that's what I wanted. I mean, they're way too heavy to start with, so.
Right.
Whatever.
Yeah, I'm still rocking this 24-inch Symphonic that I got from Circuit City in like 2001, 2002. It's got like the screen is flat. It's not a rounded tube. Yeah. It's weird.
Oh yeah.
Well, I guess it's not weird, but it looks nice. Yeah, that's still my go-to. Still works 20 years later.
Does it have S video?
It might. Yes, it does. It's right there on the front. I can see it from here. Right. Don't use it, but you know.
I was gonna say mine does. I need to buy some fucking cables.
Yeah. We should probably start approaching wrapping this shit up.
Yeah, I believe I've talked about my games.
Something that I watched recently. You guys both watched Watchmen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh god.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I finally watched fucking Watchmen.
Oh, it's so good.
That show is so fucking good.
That show's really good.
Did you finish it?
Or? Yes, I finished it. I am done with it.
Like, that's the thing. It's like 8 tremendous episodes and 1 good episode. Like I wasn't blown away by the ending, but it compared to everything, it's still just,
yeah, it's just like, it's like, yeah, it all that, and then it had to come to a conclusion,
right, and then it had to stop, which, yeah. And I'm also happy that it did stop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, he promises not to do more unless they have an idea first, like,
yeah.
Because they were offered so much money to do a second season.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I reread the book right before I watched the series. And,
nice.
You know, not only the way that it honors the spirit of the original, but also, like, sort of takes those themes and repurposes them for the world in which we live today. It was fantastic. Yeah. God, it was so good.
No, it's the best thing I can't think of his stupid name. Lindelof.
Has done.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, easily.
Like, I know a lot. Like, I need to see The Leftovers. I know a lot of people said Leftovers is good, but man, I was ready for it to be a good show with those mystery box hooks. And yes, there's things to pull you to the next episode, but it's the same. It's what I said with, like, Gravity Falls. As long as I'm really into the show, I don't care if you have your little hooks to get me to the next episode.
Mm-hmm.
As long as the episode's working by itself without that fucking mystery box.
And my proof of that was forcing Jan to watch it. Like, after episode 2, I was like, babe, I know you don't care about, like, what? I know you don't care about.
Yeah.
I know you don't care. This show is so good, I think that you will like it. And, like, at the end of every episode, she definitely had questions like, okay, there's something more going on with that guy. What's the deal with that guy? And I could fill her in the background, but just the moment to, you know, the episode to episode, the self-containedness of the story was enough for her to be like, what the fuck just happened? Yeah, we got to watch the next one right now.
Yeah, I was surprised that I was able to make it over a year without knowing a damn thing about what happened in that show.
Yeah, good for you.
Somehow, just vaguely being aware of it. So, when I started it up, and so, I watched it after, you know, everything that happened last summer with the George Floyd protests and everything. And I was just, like, immediately, like, first episode, like, cops have to cover their faces and, like, the Rorschachs are a bunch of racists and like having to unlock their guns. It was just like, holy shit.
Uh-huh.
like where they went with, Redford rations, Robert Redford reparations and like all of that shit. It was just like, it was a lot after watching that first episode just to be like, oh, I don't know what I expected about where they were going to take this show, but my God.
No, that's why it felt so, right, because it wasn't like they were dancing around things. They went, like, the pilot being about the Oklahoma
Tulsa,
I mean, like, it's such a good, there's such a good pilot. Like, after that, I was I'm fucking watching whatever you do.
Well, then it was interesting to see like how it eventually tied back into the book. Yeah. Because I didn't expect it to tie in the book as directly as it ended up in the
Neither
end.
Neither did I, because they did such a good job establishing, like, not mm-hmm. only, like, yes, this is the world of the book 30 years later, and it totally makes sense that this mm-hmm. is where that world would lead to, but also the world is so fascinating on its own because of yes. all those details that you just mentioned. You're like, okay, the rules of this, they do such a good job of, like, integrating the rules of this world in that pilot.
Yeah, agreed. And I think it's the something I look for is that restraint, because everybody says they love world building, but world building when you just spew out everything is boring. But if mm-hmm. you know, those characters know that world exists and they're just living in that world and they're just giving us yeah. that information when we need it.
Yeah, everything mm-hmm. feels purposeful. Like every Chekhov's gun is there for a reason, yes. and those guns all go off.
Yeah, it's like not until the very end that it's suddenly like revolving around, you know, old characters.
Right. In their costumes and everything.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, more or less, yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, up until that, yeah, it's just like watching Veidt go crazy yeah. in wherever he was and, you know, learning about that backstory.
Like the sly making fun of the Snyder version, too, with the show within the show and stuff like that. Yeah. That's not railing against it, but if that's how you feel, it's pretty obvious.
Yeah, no, and they did the giant squid.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
They made the whole show for me, really. It's like, oh, they did the giant squid and they made it work, and it's like, no, it was impossible to make work. Audiences would never accept it.
Yeah, whatever.
And just like, nope, it's just there it is, and it works, and it's great, and it's crazy and weird.
Yeah, there's lots of conversations about how Zack Snyder filters the media that he like wants to present on screen through fascist eyes.
Yeah, so that was great, and was like the first time I've sat and watched a show by myself in a long time, because mm-hmm. usually I don't do that. But yeah, I discovered this joy with the, you know, we have a Roku TV, much like yours, Dave, except like a few years newer.
Yeah, love my Roku TV.
Yeah, but, you know, eventually, because, you know, Lauren sometimes goes to bed at, like, fucking 8 o'clock because she has to wake up really early for work these yeah. days. Oh. And I'm just like, she keeps the bedroom door open, you know, as a thing. And so I'm like, I'm trying to, you know, find ways to enjoy the television with headphones on. And with the Roku thing, you can have it play the audio through the app on your phone.
Yeah.
And then I could hook up my Bluetooth headphones to my phone. And so I can sit there and watch a show at a good volume and,
nice.
You know...
A fact also, I have to remind Jan about every single time she goes to bed early. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to go watch Mandalorian. You know, like when there were new episodes of Mandalorian. Mm-hmm. And like she'd wake up the next day and be like, did you watch TV at all last night? I didn't hear it. And I'm like, yeah, babe, I use the headphones. Yeah. You can do it on the app. Like every time she discovers this fact anew.
Yeah. Once I figured that out, I was just like, oh, this is awesome. And actually, and also helps me concentrate on what I'm watching.
Yeah.
With the headphones on better. Sound quality and so that's great, and I'll have to watch some other shit at some point.
WandaVision yet?
No,
I have seen all the WandaVision.
I have not, and I don't know what I need to know. I don't know what I need to know before watching it.
Marvel-wise?
Seen no. Infinity War and Endgame?
No, I have not.
Have you seen Ultron?
No.
All right, so what you need to know is that Vision's dead.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you just spoil a lot of stuff for me there, Tim?
No, one thing.
Uh-oh. Like that, the thing.
One
with
thing in Infinity War.
But he's dead.
Yeah.
Like, that's
it. That's what you need to know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Going into WandaVision. Yeah.
Okay.
The death in the movie is not an emotional. Any.
Sorry, you were like 12 movies behind. I didn't think you cared.
I'm just, it's the one thing we knew going into End War or Endgame, I guess.
Okay.
Sort of thing. It's more about the emotions. The emotions.
Dave, I have definitely not ruined the end of the MCU or the Infinity Gauntlet Infinity Stone storyline for you.
Okay, so this is something that everyone who has started watching WandaVision knows from the outset. That is, this is given information.
Oh, that's not a thing in the show. Yeah, no, this happened years ago in the movies.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it is known that, yeah. I don't know if you'd really, you kind of have to know that going into this show.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, it's not a thing that happens in the show.
No.
Okay. It's not like, and it turns out he's been dead the whole time.
No.
Okay.
No. No. Okay. No. No.
All right. That's fair. I still have to imagine that there are emotional impacts that will not resonate with me, having not seen most of the Avengers movies.
Yeah, I don't know yet.
And now I've had a run of Vision comics from a few years ago on like Kindle that I've been meaning to read, which I think maybe I should.
Mm-hmm. You should. Those are good.
Because I don't know. I just don't know anything about these characters. So
I don't think it has anything to do with the show. That book does. I thought it did at first, but in watching the show, I don't think it does anymore.
Okay. Well, anyway, we don't need to catch Dave up on.
No.
I mean, I mean, my MCU opinions have definitely like dipped in the last 4-5 this phase. So this is a nice bringing me back sort of.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's Marvel's finally telling a story in an interesting way, and it's been a long time since they've taken a risk in the style side of things.
Okay.
And it's I think people are kind of scared about like the sitcomness of it in the first place. And I think they do a really, really good job about like, no, we're going to make a sitcom. Like you we're going full hog into this concept that we're doing. So it works like that. Like it just goes. Yeah. It takes it. A lot of people are thrown by it because it's a fucking TV show. Yeah. Kids don't know how to watch
it. I mean, like arguably after the first Avengers movie, like the first Avengers movie, like things with those movies started to feel very formulaic.
Yeah.
And they started to have a very samey feel with like a couple, you know, that stand out here and there.
No, there's definitely high. Yeah, I love Black Panther and all that.
Yeah.
It's, but you know, everything has the same blue gray filter over it. Everything kind of works out this way or that way. There's a lot of previs, a lot of the action looks the same. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what's hurt the team up movies. That's why I mixed up Civil War with the Avengers movies. Like,
yeah.
I'm like, well, now it's just everybody and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't feel as special.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's why, you know, in WandaVision, which is a very big departure from that shit. It's also coming, you know, the last Marvel movie that came out would have been Far From Home, which was in 2019, which was shortly after Endgame came out. And, you know, Endgame happened and they finished this whole saga that they've been building to for 12 years and 20 some movies. And, you know, that was
movies at this point, too. I haven't seen Far From Home. I didn't see Captain Marvel. I haven't seen Wasp.
Captain Marvel's okay. I like Ant-Man and Wasp. I like the Ant-Man movies as kind of like palate cleansers. And I like Far From Home, but I don't like it nearly as much as Homecoming. Some people like it more. You know, a lot of these movies, more of them just kind of end up in the same like block.
Yep.
You know, over time, it's just like, yeah, it's
a problem.
It's a good thing, but they don't stand out as much from each other.
Yeah.
So now coming after that, and then last year, their whole schedule got derailed because they come out.
Yeah.
Yeah. They refuse to not, you know, they want to put those movies out in theaters to make the big bucks. So they're not dropping those shits on the streaming services. That's what they have WandaVision for. So now coming back to the MCU after a year and a half of nothing, and this being so different, it's been very enjoyable.
Yeah, and I think something I like too is like we're viewing it as is, which is, you know, this is the first return to MCU, but that's not what WandaVision was meant for. Like,
no.
When it was conceived, it was just gonna be on in the mix of everything else. It probably would have been kind of lost, honestly. Yeah. So it's kind of to see it positioned like that right now.
Yeah, I don't remember what would have come out. I mean, I know Black Widow was last year. I don't remember whether there was something else. Eternals was last year.
Yep. Which we haven't seen a trailer for.
No, I've seen Legos for. I've seen the Lego sets.
Ooh.
Yeah, how's spoilers. Yeah, like cool stuff. Yeah. I don't know who any of these characters are. And then yeah, so yeah, now I'm interested in seeing Falcon and Winter Soldier and March. Mm-hmm. Seeing how that goes, them actually doing fucking Baron Zemo. God fucking damn it. Finally.
I'm still mostly interested in Patton Oswalt's MODOK show. That's
coming. Oh, sure. Sure, yeah. Absolutely. That's
the most interesting.
But. What If looked pretty cool from what I saw of it, depending on how seriously they take themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. Dave, what are you doing?
As much as I've bitched about the MCU, I went back and watched Iron Man after WandaVision. I don't know how many. There's 22 more movies I'm not going to get through.
That I'm Googling short lists of like, what are the few essential Marvel movies that you need? You know, I think,
you saw Black Panther, right?
Yeah, I saw Black Panther. I have seen Captain America, the first Avenger. I've seen Iron Man 1. I've seen Avengers. That's it. I've seen Guardians of the Galaxy. So I think if I watch Ultron, Civil War, Infinity War, and maybe Captain Marvel?
Nah.
I mean, the ones that you've seen, throw in Iron Man 3 and you've got, like, probably my top-ish tier, I think, for the most part. Probably the best stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, no, of essential things, yeah, I think you're, even though they aren't my favorite movies, like Ultron, Civil War, and
Infinity,
and then
Infinity
really
War
it's just,
and then Endgame.
Yeah, you watch the Avengers, that like everything else in between is kind of it's color for that.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's more individual stories and like, yeah, of course all that shit ties in, but I don't think you're going to miss anything major.
If I'm going to critical path this.
Yeah, those are the movies to watch, which is still like 12 hours of movies.
I know. Yeah. I liked Ultron more than most. Like, it's not a perfect movie. I haven't gone back to it in a while, but the people that are in WandaVision is one of the reasons that I like that movie. So,
Yeah.
Okay.
Vision's fine. Vision doesn't die at all. I don't know what I was saying earlier. Sorry about that.
He's okay? Thank goodness.
He's fine.
All right.
Yeah, he'll be fine when he is. Yeah. Nothing bad happens to the Vision.
I mean, that's my problem with Infinity War. And I mean, it's comic because they're all comic book logic is like, how are people getting that involved when something quote unquote big happens in those two movies anyways?
Yeah.
When they say, here's how we get around it.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was really hard for me to invest at that point.
Yeah, sure. Oh yeah. Yeah. No, I read comic books.
Yeah.
I know when I can invest in a storyline or not. Is it published by Marvel? I probably can't get that invested, you know?
And this is why I have not seen these movies up until now. There is getting to be such a huge part of the culture that I've got this blind spot with now. And then something comes along like WandaVision, which people are just sort of freaking out about. And I want to know what's exciting about it, but I also want to be able to be excited in the same way that I hear everyone else getting excited about. And I know that that's not going to happen unless I have at least some of the shared cultural background that is presumed with a show like this.
Like I think it's exciting because it goes beyond the usual Marvel fare.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. That's part of it, too, is that in contrast to that, it is something new and exciting and a daring direction. But, you know, I
yeah.
No, that's what I liked about Mandalorian as well, or especially about, I guess, the first season is it felt like such a departure from the bullshit that it, well, I guess actually it preceded at that time, but it was like, even if it, you know, it's still Star Wars, but like just meeting it out in an episodic fashion, you know, it feels different and it's, you know, detached from that baggage of the Skywalker saga that it's like, okay, I can just enjoy, I can just decouple from all of that noise and crap and just enjoy some Star Wars stories that'll take like 30 to 40 minutes to resolve, maybe, depending.
I don't dislike it. I just don't have the fervor for it.
Like, how many episodes did you watch?
3 episodes.
Yeah.
And I mean, they were all plotted the same. Mandalorian was the least interesting bit. Nick Nolte was awesome.
Nick Nolte was awesome.
Prosthetics are great.
Well, those 3 episodes, that is a 3-episode pilot arc.
Yeah.
So, you know, now you are ready to dive into the series proper. That's those 3 episodes are a great introduction, and then the rest of it takes off from there. It only goes up.
I don't have like negative things to say. It just hasn't hooked me.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like Ludwig Göransson's doing some great shit with the music.
Oh, it's so good.
I'm curious how I'm going to feel at the end of the second season, because you know how people didn't spoil Watchmen? Like, 1 minute after that episode of Mandalorian.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, the second season has been certainly way more controversial. But boy, that first season, especially, I think, if you're about to hit episode 4, boy, that was one of the ones that I loved. I think episode 4 is the one that made me really be like, oh, this is, yes.
No, I'm excited too. It's one of those things where I just get distracted by, in this case, DuckTales 2017. Where I would watch one episode of Mandalorian, then I would watch a season of DuckTales. until DuckTales comes back, because boy, is that show good.
It's so good. I wish I could watch it by myself, but I need to watch it with children who noisily comment on it all the time, and just it's not but it's it's so good. I wish I could experience it in a more pure way.
It's hard to, I mean, like, that show kind of only works if you have DuckTales lore / Disney Afternoon lore, but it doesn't play to, like, it's not pandering.
Oh no, like, not at all.
Works on its own, but like, you kind of have to go like, oh yeah, of course, that character that showed up for one episode.
See, I don't have a lot of that lore personally, but I know that it exists. Like, I know, knowing that, especially the Donald Duck comic book lore is deep, and knowing that they pull from it, there's a lot of stuff that happens on the show. I'm like, oh, that must be, that's something from a book like 50 years ago. That's so cool that they thought to include that. And that still tickles me.
Yeah, that's what you need to listen to What a Cartoon on, because they go through the full history thereof.
I believe they have definitely helped me learn about my Karl Barks history. I think it was listening to like one of their reviews of like the original series.
I really like that.
Yeah.
Excited to. I'm trying to think of, you know, WandaVision, like I just miss a lot of the quote unquote water cooler things, especially, you know, I had dropped off of Game of Thrones. I was keeping up. Like, I saw Endgame, but I saw it like like way later, sort of thing. So I'm just sort of like, oh, I'm finally watching the things other people are watching. I'm just like, shit, who else is watching this right now?
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah, we had a WandaVision conversation this morning at work.
Ah. Yeah. That's the thing, too. I'm not like going to
going to work.
I mean,
I go and see people at work. All right. Should we wrap this up? This up here? Solid 2 hours.
It's good. This is almost exactly 2 hours.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, guys, thank you so much for joining us again for Triple Radio on Fat Gatsby. I've been Dave. That's been Tim. We've had a Weiss.
Weiss-tastic.
Emperor
off. Caught up on some shit.
Yeah. All right. Well, then maybe we'll do this again sooner rather than later. Not making any promises, but it'd be nice.
People know better than to expect that from us.
Don't rely on us.
Yeah, you know better than to rely on us. I don't know.
We still love you. We promise. But this relationship is not healthy.
Yeah, it's surprisingly hard. I don't know. Just to like remember to do this in the pandemic.
Uh-huh.
When it's just like, well, it's like I got a fucking like, oh my god, never mind. I'll go off. I'll go off. Well, no, it's like, so today, he's, you know, it's off. Like get home. Lauren went and got the boy from his after school thing. Then he gets home, but then he has to do his fucking homework. Like while I'm cooking dinner, because on top of like on the days when he goes to school, he still has asynchronous work for that day to do on his iPad. And it fucking sucks those days, because like it sucks those days.
First grade, right?
He's kindergarten.
In kindergarten, all that homework we had in kindergarten.
he had homework in pre-K. It was usually like a sheet, and it was just like, you know, work on making the letter R.
Yeah,
but this is a lot more involved. But they have to do more because he only goes to school 2 days a week, you know. Yeah. So it's like you get him, and you know the teacher probably wouldn't care if we like stacked it all onto Wednesday when he's not going anywhere. But I think Lauren, who was home with him all day, would care about having to get through three of these journals with him all at once. But so it's like, you know, he gets home, you know. If I pick him up, you know, he gets home like 4:30, 4:45, like got to jump right into cooking. He's wound up, but he has to do his goddamn homework. And that can take, you know, half hour, 45 minutes for him to get through that, depending on, you know, what is involved. And then it's like, you know,
we're there to help him. Right. I mean, he's not just sitting doing that on this. He's asking you like, daddy, what is blah, blah, blah.
Well, there's some of it he can handle on his own, and there's some that he needs a lot of help with. And then on some level, I just need to make sure that he's doing it
right,
and doing it correctly. So one of us can't be too far away while he's doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But, you know, then cooking dinner, eating dinner, getting him to eat dinner. Then all of a sudden it's like 6 o'clock. He wants to hang out, have fun. Oh, guess what? You got to like get in the bathtub at 6:30 and get your ass into bed. So it's just like our evenings are so compressed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it sucks and it pisses him off because it's like, you know, he wants to hang out and have fun and play Switch. And it's like, well, buddy, you know, tonight's a bath night. It took you a while to get your homework done. And now, you know, you took an hour to eat dinner tonight because you do that sometimes. So it's like, no, we don't have time to hang out, have fun. Sorry, you got to go to bed. Maybe I'll see you. We'll get to hang out tomorrow. I don't know. It sucks. Yeah. But that's why it's not always like, oh, right. Yeah, let's get a podcast together for tonight. It's like, nah, I'm busy, like right up till 8 o'clock.
Well, yeah. And then in your downtime, you, Tim, are also reviewing new release video games for that other podcast that you've
been doing. Yeah, that other podcast. So, I got nothing I'm working on right now, but I'm just enjoying video games.
That's great to hear. That's why you've deigned to call us to order.
Here we are. Well, I knew this week that it's like I didn't have D&D this week. I don't have any reviews coming up, so I had some pretty free evenings. All of my only commitment is Dynamite on Wednesday night.
Well, you know what? The Fat Gatsby fans are grateful.
You're welcome.
Dynamite's really good.
Yeah, I know. I was about to start talking about that, but maybe next time we could talk about how good Dynamite is.
That last main event. All right.
The forbidden door has been opened. Yeah. Let's go.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for joining us. Please leave us likes and comments on the social media when you see this. I don't know why, but it makes us feel good. That's all.
It does make us feel good to know that you're listening.
It really,
and that we should keep doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Just let us know if you want us to keep doing this, and we'll try to do it again. Just if one person says, hey, I listen to your podcast.
Sometimes that's all it takes. Just give us one little hit, one little comment, like or subscribe. You could come on. Just smash.
Or whether you
smash our confidence. Not,
but if you like us, please just God like us.
Fuck.
All right. Good night, everyone. Good night. I'm ending this. Goodbye.